Welcome back to another Creative Conversations with me, Joe Stevens. I'm here with Martin, who was one of the team, I believe, who helped set up Portland Rocks. Hello, Martin.
Hello, Joe.
Right, we're going to start at the beginning, but Portland Rocks. Could you tell us how that got started, the beginnings?
Portland Rocks started mainly as a result of a conversation with a man called Tom Hopkins and also the regional officer from Youth Music called Jilly Rudling, who sadly died. And after her death, we decided that something needed to be done to really try and lift music on Portland. And so Tom knew various people, such as James Kimber and myself, and a DJ called Matt Whiteside, and was involved with things like the Big Grove Festival, and Emma Kimber of Hot Jam International, and pulled a team together to discuss setting up a music project on Portland. We started in September 2009, initially with about 15 to 20 children down at Underhill School, running junk sessions with James Kimber. We had a slight change of roles in that I took on the project management job. A man called Steve Garden, who's well known locally, took on the songwriting, the band strand, so that we could give the children sort of a wide variety of musical experience.
So that's 2009, so you've been going since then.
Yeah.
Hard thing to keep things like this going, I suppose, really.
You have the euphoria of starting the project off and everyone's excited. We had a bit of a lull sort of early in 2011 when numbers went down a little bit. But for most of the project's life, we've had between 20 and 25 young people registered and attending the workshops on a regular basis. One of the biggest changes we made, which we felt was really positive, we felt we outgrew the original venue, which was Underhill School. So we took the decision to move to the Islanders Club on Portland.
Which is
in Fortune's Well, and it's a youth club. Since then, it's really blossomed, and the young people seem to prefer it there. Things can be a little bit more relaxed because you're not in somebody's teaching space.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't have to be quite so careful because you don't want to move something that somebody's set up for a lesson the next day, and we don't have to worry about that at the Islanders. And also, we gained equipment storage space by moving to Islanders as well.
Okay, and also for young people, almost feel it a bit more that it's more their space than the school is.
Yeah. I mean, one of the early decisions was not to base it at Royal Manor because we wanted to not have it in a school. Then we ended up at Underhill, who made us very welcome, which the young people were fine with, and they enjoyed it down there. Then we took the decision, because we needed more space, to move to Islanders, and the project has grown since then.
So what sorts of workshops do you put on then at the Portland Rocks?
James Kimber runs a junk workshop, so they do junk composition and junk performance. And Steve Garden, he has sometimes up to three bands rehearsing in different spaces in Islanders. With them, they will be either writing their own songs or performing covers. Sometimes it might just be two or three people sat in a corner working on an acoustic version of a song, either their own or a cover version again. Also, we'll have people playing pool, people playing air hockey.
Yeah, so there's so just playing using youth club.
Yeah, just using it as a youth club and a sort of a chill-out space.
Sounds a bit of a headache.
It's good fun, to be honest. It's nice and relaxed. We've, as well as Steve and James, we've also got two trainees. Amy Brown is a trainee who works with Steve, supports the young band, very good singer and pianist. And James has his trainee, Lucy McCarthy,
to help as well. Okay, and that's a good experience for them as well, isn't it?
It is, and the great thing about the trainees is that if the music leader's not available, the trainees will then go out with the groups to the performances. That's something that we've developed over the last 2 years, that they've become more confident so that they're happy to go out. I always make sure I'm there as well, just to sort of cover all angles.
No, I'm just thinking, like, so if you've got three bands on the go and somebody else composing over there and James banging away...
Well, because Islanders is bigger, they sit. We've got the main hall in the middle, and then there's a side room where a band can go, and then there's also a gym at the end of the building where another group can go, and then you might have, if the group in the main room is playing fairly quietly, you then might have another duo or trio discussing something or trying something out in another corner of the room, and it just seems to work.
So it's quite a big space, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so that's attracted a different type of young person to come to the sessions?
We've got, I think it's between 12 and 15 of the original people who started on the project are still coming. But we have picked up some slightly different people, because being where we are now, we've picked up some who've sort of walked past, wondered what was going on, wandered in, and then decided to come back week after week. So there has been a slight change, but it hasn't been anything particularly dramatic. What's been nice is that some of the people who have joined are not the people who are already playing musical instruments. Mm. So we've got one or two have come along and really enjoy going and playing junk music, but then they'll come down and Steve will sit behind a drum kit or put a guitar on their lap and just teach them a few chords. So they're picking things up from scratch that they may never have done before.
Also think about the difficulties just for the people working there, like the adults, just that continuity. I do think that there is a certain enthusiasm when you start something, but 3 years in, suddenly it's like becoming a bit more of a chore and a job.
I think what's kept it alive has been performances, where it's always been a project that's gone out and performed quite a regular basis. So that might be a small-scale concert in a local pub, such as the George on Portland. We took part in the Grove Festival. We've had groups in that 2 years running. We've done the Halloween Festival for Revive, then Osprey Key. So there's always community events that we get involved in, either whether it's the junk group or whether it's one of the bands. Mm-hmm. And some of the bands also that have grown up with the project are also starting to strike out on their own, mm-hmm. and look for their own gig. So I think it's the live performance element. On average, the project goes out and does a performance probably at least once a month. And that also includes things like B-side as well. So some of the other things we get involved in.
So I do like that idea of having like, say, an output, a professional looking output that you aim for. So a lot of the projects I'm involved in, you know, it's like an exhibition or a book. There's something physical at the end. So working towards a performance is, yeah, a great thing.
And what we do also is we have given the young people video cameras and also handheld digital recorders, so they can record their own rehearsals, they can record performances at whatever stage they're at. When we submitted the final report to Youth Music, as part of that process, we had two small video recorders that we just gave to the young people and just said, go round, you know, let's see how your take on Portland rocks. And that was also one of the nights when James and Lucy were leading on a t-shirt spraying session. So we decided we would have a Portland Rocks t-shirt for our performances, but the young people would actually make it themselves.
Okay. Great successful project. Now the hard thing about these things is the continuity of keeping them running. What do you reckon for future now?
At the moment, it's a very difficult climate to try and get funding. We've been very fortunate in that Synergy Housing have helped us out with funding that will keep us going to Easter. We are at the moment waiting for news on our most recent youth music bid. We are also hoping to set the project up as a social enterprise, because we want the young people to be involved in the running of the project, and also to try and set some things up that will actually generate income to help keep the project going. We're looking at expanding into some slightly different things as well. One of the bids I'm working on at the moment is about taking the Islanders on for a second night to give young bands up to about the age of 18 somewhere to rehearse that's safe, cheap and well-equipped. We're also looking at potential of instrumental lessons during one evening, perhaps guitar lessons, maybe also tuition on orchestral instruments, with the possibility of running some groups there as well, so maybe a small wind group or another jazz group, whatever we feel there's a need for. So Portland Rocks is actually looking to expand. It's a difficult thing to do at the moment. Again, Tom Hopkins is working very closely with the project to find sources of funding. We're trying to get bids written, and it's hard going.
I'm on top of your day job.
Yes.
Very hard. Quite a nice idea. So social enterprise, so those performances you do, you can suddenly start charging.
Yes.
Really?
That's what we hope. And the other thing is that we talked about, through James Kimbrough as well, about maybe going out. He's quite interested in the idea of visual art. And we've talked about possible ideas of things to generate income. So some of our young people are very into their art as well as into their music. So we talked about things like the Portland Rocks Christmas card that could be sold to raise money, Portland Rocks postcards, a Portland Rocks calendar, as well as making CDs of our music that could be sold, any revenue we can raise for performances. It's sort of...
Because James was a good person to have on board with that, because I hadn't realised he was a director of his Weapons of Sound.
And oh, yeah.
He was quite a businessman, didn't he? Yeah.
He's been sort of very good in that he's made us think about things other than the pure music, because obviously my background being a musician, and Steve as well. So it's nice to have that different perspective on things.
And a slightly different idea of, you know, even though it might be a lot of money, it's still quite a nice source of little bits of... Yeah. Income that could generate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I suppose if some of the... Well, I suppose I don't know how much gigs pay, but I suppose it's...
One of the problems for 16-year-old bands is that not everybody wants to pay them.
No,
not everybody wants to pay them a lot of money.
They got frustrated with a junk band at the beginning, a group of young people bashing, smashing in.
Well, I've run a soul band in the past that started at Royal Manor, the Mum Jum Soul Band. And they are now all at university, most of them doing music degrees. They started doing function gigs when they were about 14, 15. And in the early days, most people sort of thought, well, we'll just give them a donation. And it was hard, and it's quite hard to get a young band taken seriously. Mm. People are quite happy to give them sort of £40 or £5 each or something like that. But to go into a venue and say, well, we want a realistic fee for doing this gig, that's quite different.
Yeah.
But you're also then into the whole... problems of health and safety, public liability.
But that's where Portland Rocks could come in as an organisation. You can
that's
have
right.
things like public liability
and
that you're an adult organisation, so that they're paying the organisation.
Yes, so they come to the organisation. And some of the community groups have been very good at that. We've done quite a lot of work for the Revive group in Fortune's Well. That has been... really successful, and I go to their committee meetings as well to sort of keep us involved with what they're doing. And we've done a number of events for them.
Yeah, because James was talking about the one you did at High Angle Battery.
That's right, in the tunnels. We've got that recorded. It just needs editing. Playing in the dark, junk in the dark.
So there's possibilities there. So it's quite. I suppose it's exciting in a way. I suppose this is. And does that side of things interest you? The paperwork, the funding, the possibilities.
The possibilities excite me. I do get a bit bogged down with the paperwork.
I suspect having to do it all day and then
have
to do it in the evening.
Because my background is an instrumental teacher and performer for the first 11, 12 years of my career, and then going into classroom teaching, partly as a means of paying the bills, it's nice to get out and actually do some music. That's the thing. It's nice to be involved in the actual playing and being involved in performing. It's the paperwork and things I do get a bit bogged down with it. I mean, this is the first project of this type that I project managed. It's been quite a large scale undertaking, like you said, on top of a full-time job as well, and with a young family. It's been quite a big commitment, but it has been an exciting 2.5-3 years to watch this come from the point where it was a group of people meeting in a small room. This is what we plan to do. And the trials and frustrations of getting it to the point where it's going to start, and then maintaining it and building it. And we've got early recordings that were made after about 6 months of the young people's songs and performances of Junk and things. And to hear the progress that they've made over the last 2 years is incredible. And two young people associated with the project as well have both now signed up to Southwest Music School. And those of us involved with the project are convinced that the opportunities they've had through Portland Rocks has played a major part in getting them into that organisation. And one of them is now actually working as a trainee on the project.
Oh, right.
As well. Sorry, a volunteer.
That whole thing of seeing things through and then having young people more and more almost lead the organisation is
well,
great.
Well, he's mentoring young musicians. Yeah. He's mentoring sort of students 2-3 years younger than him, which is fantastic.
It is fantastic. No, I've got, and I really like the idea that they're covering for people like the teachers, like James, when James is busy off touring, but they just step into the breach. It's great. Really good.
They've been a real asset to the project.
But I quite like the idea of putting projects together. And like I say, I don't mind the paperwork so much because I don't have to do as much as you. Because it sort of firms the ideas up. So you have a conversation like this and then you try to put it down on paper. Because you're talking about possibilities and then you're narrowing it down to super funders?
I think that what tends to happen with me is I tend to go off in all sorts of tangents and have all sorts of ideas, and it's actually me that needs reining in.
But you don't just do a developer on your own. I mean, that's where working with people like...
Yes.
They're there.
And Tom is excellent in that I will stick an idea down on paper and it will just be a raw idea that I have come up with, perhaps with a budget, some sort of budget attached to it, and I can get it across to him and he'll then knock it into shape, and then it comes back and before you go... Actually, yes, that's what I meant.
Oh, excellent. That's very good.
And he's very, very good at that.
Very good. And he's been involved key right through, right from
yes,
the beginning.
Yes, he's sort of the unseen member of Portland Rocks. Mm. He attends the steering group meetings. He's been my mentor, I think, because I've not project managed a youth music project before. He has done it. He's been my mentor in that when I've been stuck and not quite sure what to do, I've been able to go to him and say, what should I do about this? Okay. So it's sort of everybody supporting everybody else. And we've also, our music leaders, we all teach Arts Award. James and Steve, one of the things we did early on in the project was we got them trained as Arts Advisors so they can teach Arts Award. I've got lots of experience with the Arts Award, so I've mentored them with Arts Award techniques, with marking and moderating when we're putting people in for the Bronze and Silver Arts Award, just like Tom has mentored me in terms of project management. So it's all sort of been mutual, which has been nice.
And they're obviously mentoring their trainees, and it's getting it's filtering all the way down.
Yeah.
And so on. That's it. Brilliant. Really, no, I think it's very, very impressive. So have you got any Portland Rocks gigs coming up, actually? I don't know when this is going out yet, so...
Okay, the next gig we have is on the 25th of February at the George on Portland. That's our young band starting at 3 o'clock. That's a Saturday afternoon. Then some of the bands from Portland Rocks are playing at a concert at Royal Manor Arts College on the 20th of March. Then three groups from the project are going to the Youth Music Regional Festival in Taunton on the 24th of March.
Right.
They're the ones that are firm in the diary at the moment, and then sort of further ahead, we're looking at various things at the moment.
So you've got all your family. Does your family come and take part in?
Both my children have been in the project more or less since it started.
Right. So that's helpful.
Yes, yeah. So the Malinda rhythm section. So because my youngest daughter is a drummer and my oldest daughter's a bass player.
Okay. Very good, very good. So you've got them well trained. I don't know how you balance it all, because we haven't really mentioned it, but you're a teacher here at Royal Manor School, which is probably would take up anybody's normal life completely. And then running Portland Rocks is quite a major thing. How do you manage to balance? Have you got any tips on how you do that work-life balance?
With difficulty.
A great deal of difficulty.
I get up early and I go to bed late, I think. But the work-life balance is important. I don't work every night of the week, and I do make sure that I keep large chunks of my weekend free. If I was to put anything down to how I manage it, is through the use of ICT, which might sort of seem a bit of an unusual thing, but I'm not very good with paper. I lose bits of paper and I can't find them, but... So Portland Rocks is run from either my laptop or my home PC. And so when I go home, I check my emails. The Portland Rocks email is one of the first things that comes up, so I can deal with things more or less instantly. Anybody who wants to contact me, it's via email or phone. And I'm not very good with mobile, so best things to sort of ring me at home or get a message to me via school. Mm. Just sort of trying to be sort of efficient rather than spending hours wading through paper. I'm just not very good with paper, and I think over the years I've gradually sort of refined that, because I've always worked long hours, always been busy. My working life hasn't really changed in the sort of 25 years I've been involved in music for a living.
Because getting up early and going to bed late is that Margaret Thatcher thing of not sleeping so much.
Yeah, it's trying to be able to switch off, that can sometimes be the hard thing, actually finding time to switch off. And there are times when you do just have to put family first.
So Portland Rocks, so what nights, how often does it run?
Portland Rocks meets for 10 weeks during a school term.
Right.
So we don't meet during school holidays. And it's usually 10, last time we did actually do 11 weeks, we did need an extra week. And we meet 5:30 on a Monday night till 7:30. and it's just open and it's just relaxed. It's, and the really important thing was just this idea that it's not like school. Mm. In fact, in the early days, I used to go straight from here. I would stay at Royal Manor and go home, get the car, drive straight to Portland Rocks. So I would go still dressed in sort of smart clothing, and so realised after a few months that the young people on the project were still seeing me in my Royal Manor role. So what I started doing was actually staying away, not going down there. In the early days, it was helpful to have me down there, and the staff liked me down there just while the project was bedding in. So I stopped going down there every week, and I made a point of whenever I did go down there, not being dressed for work. And if they call me Mr. Mullinder, I ignore them. Yeah. So they're allowed to call me by my first name.
Yeah. Does that not travel over into school?
No, it doesn't. Okay. No, it's that they all seem quite happy with that. I've got various nicknames down there as well, as we as all the staff have. Okay. That seems to have worked. It took a while to bed in. I mean, last night somebody called me sir and I just ignored them.
Okay.
So then he went, "Oh, Martin."
Yeah.
So then I answered.
All right.
It was quite strange. We just became aware of it because I was down there in a shirt and tie. They couldn't separate me from Royal Manor.
And then you're at a school as well.
So. Yeah, so it's quite strange how the children perceive it. But just by staying away and then making a point of going down there in sort of civvies, it just made such a difference. And I think it changed the sort of air of the project. When I walked in, nobody sort of felt I was down there in my school teacher capacity, because the point about it is you're not going to give someone a detention for misbehaving at Portland Rocks or start. And I make a point, not I can think of one person who goes down there, well, more than one person regularly, who may sort of miss homework deadlines or things when they're in school. But you just can't talk about that sort of thing when you're down there. So we have to keep that element of separation. It seems to work. I think if I'd been a music leader, that would have been harder. But because I have been project manager and I go down there every week, I just check everything's okay, drop my children off, and then often I will just come away. Mm. I couldn't have done that if I'd have been a music leader, and that which was the original plan. So I think it's been easier to establish that rapport with the children in a different way, because they do have to see me in two quite distinct ways.
Yeah. You tend to do it Monday nights, and it's during school terms.
Yeah.
So summer holidays and Easter. You might be doing a performance or something.
We have run a summer school before. We didn't run a summer school last year. Portland is a funny place in the summer. It's actually quite difficult to fit events in, because there is actually quite a lot going on. And we found a lot of the young people involved with the project were actually away at various points during the summer, so to actually get them together for some sort of coordinated event was quite difficult. So we came to the decision after the first year, where we did run a summer school, that we wouldn't do it, and we've sort of tended to put more of a focus into things that go on during term time, like events and things, and if we needed any extra rehearsals or whatever we need, and then not actually run a summer school. We have put things into various community activities. We were involved with an event at the skate park. We had a DJ leader down at the skate park. And we've also done outreach work at the campus as well, the pupil referral unit. Yeah. So we've had, James Kimber has done quite a lot there. And again, that's a place where we've put DJing as well.
So if somebody wants to find out more about Portland Rocks, where would you point them to?
They can either contact me, which is portlandrocks@live.co.uk, which is our email address. We also have a website, which is portlandrocks.co.uk. And on the website, you'll usually find there is, on the homepage, usually it tells of any upcoming events. There are some recordings on there. We've got more recordings waiting to go up once I can find the time to edit them.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Martin.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. It's very good of you.
you for listening to Creative Conversations with me, Joe Stephens. Join me again next week when I conclude this conversation with Martin and we would discuss the Cultural Olympiad and Olympic legacy for the area. We'll also hear a bit about thoughts about use of social media with young people. All the best.